Good afternoon, members. The chairperson is not in today and for the next week, so we need to elect the acting chairperson. And I will also request that if when we elect the acting chairperson, we should elect the acting chairperson who will act until the chairperson comes back, so that we don't have a problem with the quorum for the next meeting. So the procedure is that members will propose a member who will be acting chairperson, and then there will be another one who will be seconding. So if there's going to be more than two nominees, then it means we are going to be voting by show of hands. Then the person who has got the most votes will be the acting chairperson. So we'll start now. If there's any person that members would like to propose as a chairperson, acting chairperson, until the chairperson comes back. Honorable Botman.
So I'll suggest the name of Honorable Gam to chair us.
The name of Honorable Gam has been suggested. Any second? Honorable Khasibongwe. Okay. Any other nomination? Honorable
it has always been a convention in this committee that the opposition will second. So I put a stamp on the second.
So it means Honorable Gam has been elected the acting chairperson. Honorable Gam, can you please come and take the oath, please?
Thank you very much for the confidence. Right, today we are here, honorable members, to discuss two matters and to look into two matters. One is a briefing and consideration of the strategic and budget of the Filament Publications Board, and the second one is the briefing and consideration of the strat plan and budget of Government Printing Works. Before I give over to the Filament Publications Board to start briefing us, I would just like to us to take note of the presence here of Mr. Mandilake Mantlane. He's the new parliamentary liaison officer of the minister. Welcome here.
Thank you.
And secondly, that we also note and congratulate that Mr. Mabulu has now taken up the position of provincial manager in the Eastern Cape. Congratulations with that as well, and be sure that you might be grilled by this committee in future in that respect. So we are privileged to have with us a delegation from the Filament Publications Board, Mrs. Toko Mpulwana, is the council chairperson, Mrs. Mapula Fisher, the chief operations officer, and Mr. Jonas, how do I pronounce it? Is it Po or Fo? Poshoko, the chief financial officer. So welcome to all of you. I don't know who is going to kick off, but over to you with your presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Toko Mpulwana,
Chairperson, I would allow me to just make a few remarks. The first one being to offer the apologies of our Chief Executive Officer, Ms. Makasi. She could not come. We would like to formally register her apologies, and would like to thank members for having us today. And thank you for introducing the delegation. So I won't get into that. Just to make a few remarks that the FPB seeks to improve on its work all the time, and the mandate that we have is a huge mandate that involves classification of film, publications and games. That's our core mandate. And the nature of the industry that we deal with is that it changes. It's very difficult to keep up to date with the industry because of the technological advancements that are always there. Not long ago, we were talking about Mixit. We are now on Facebook and Twitter, and we have to all the time up the game as the film and publication board. Secondly, we just want to also inform the portfolio committee upfront that we work very well with our executive authority, which is the Home Affairs, and that we have other departments that are very close to us, Department of Communication, ICASA, the South African Police Service, because of the nature, again, of the work that we perform, and also the Department of Basic Education, because we want to work with high schools and primary schools for our education. Also, we have continuously have to work on it. You can see our logo, it's very easy to reproduce it. So you will see in our strategic plan that we want to outsmart the clever people who are now beginning to photocopy our logo for illegal use so that they do not have to comply. So it's part of our area that we want to improve on. We also, as I've said earlier, that the following are the assumptions that we've used to develop the strategy, that we want to be the regulator with sufficient know-how. So we've had to do a lot of shuffling around of our structure. We also have an assumption, we've made an assumption that the legislative review process will commence soon, and we'll be working with our executive authority in that regard. And that we also will enhance our public education and research and advocacy in the year 2012 up to 2017. So with those few remarks, I would like to thank the committee for having us, thank our executive authority, and thank the departments that work with us. And we want to assure you of our commitment to make this this institution a better institution from time to time, and also to invite honorable members to come and visit our offices. We have moved our offices. Then we will share the actual address of our offices so that you can come and see them. We have moved from Johannesburg to Centurion, which is halfway from Pretoria and Johannesburg. And so there you are. That's where we are now, at Witch Hazel Street in Centurion. I would like now to ask our COO, Ms. Fisher, to present our strategic plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, Chairperson of the committee and honorable committee members. I will be presenting the strategy, and the CFO will take us through the financial implications. The outline of the presentation will start with the FPB mandate, the vision, the mission, and situational analysis of the environment that we operate in. the strategic outcomes 1, 2, and 3, and then the budget. Our mandate remains the same as indicated in the legislation. We are about protecting of children from exposure to harmful and inappropriate content, content that leads to children being exposed to adult content prematurely. We punish the use of children in pornography as well. All this we achieve through the regulation of films, publications, certain publications, and games. The vision of the Film and Publication Board has been changed a little bit. It used to read a leading credible media content regulator that protects consumers. Now we've added a few things, and we are saying we want to be a leading and credible regulator of content of films, games, and certain publications. We are now focusing a lot on content, and we are saying we do all this in order to inform and protect adults and children. So we don't just focus on children. There are adults who may not want to be, for example, exposed to horror movies, and they need to be informed beforehand that this movie contains. So we are about facilitating choices and giving effect to the values that are enshrined in the Constitution. So our mission then is to ensure efficient and effective protection of adults and children against exposure to undesirable media and entertainment content through various means. They are not limited to this, but we felt that we should just highlight these ones because these are in the main how we protect children and adults and inform adults. We ensure classification of content in alignment with societal norms and values. I think this one is the part of our work that almost everybody is familiar with. When you go to movies, when you watch DVDs, you will always see the FPB logo indicating the age, who can watch it, and the consumer information that would say it has violence or it has bad language and all those things. We also enforce and monitor industry compliance, ensuring that there is adherence to classifications that have been imposed by FPB, both by industry and society in general. We facilitate the reporting of child pornography and the prosecution of perpetrators, and you will see that later when we unpack the strategy, our focus has been mainly on child pornography, but there is a need, because of the environment that we operate in, there's been a need now to move away, and not to move away, but to expand our focus to include online child protection as a whole, not just the use of children in child pornography. We have issues such as cyberbullying. The chairperson has already also mentioned social networks that leads to children being exposed to undesirable content as well. So the strategy now has widened to include cyber safety in general, child online protection as it's referred to internationally. We empower the public through robust information sharing and education to make informed viewing and reading and entertainment choices. I think we'll all agree that you can't be a regulator and not have an education and awareness element for members of the public to be informed about what exactly do you regulate and how does it help them and how can they ensure that they're protected and they benefit from the services that you offer. Restricting access to the creation and distribution of adult content, the FPB legislation actually highlights licensing conditions for adult shops and where adult content can be distributed so that children are not unduly exposed to adult content in society. We also empower the public on responsible use of new media. MEM has already highlighted that we are in a technologically advanced environment and there's always new types of media, and how do we ensure that these don't affect society negatively. So broadly, these are the areas that the strategy will focus on. And in terms of the situation, I think I've already alluded to some of the environment that you operate in, but just to highlight that in the main, our mandate involves regulation of games, publications, and phones. And we have, over the past 3 years, classified about approximately 20,000 films, publications, and games. The detailed information is available in our annual report on our website if anybody is interested. we have seen over the years a decline in the number of games and films and publications that are submitted for classification. And this, when we did further analysis, we've realized that, in fact, society has moved from consuming media physically offline to media being consumed on digital platforms, your internet and everything. And we've had to revise our approach and our strategy to focus on compliance of media that is distributed online, as you will see later when I explain. We operate also in a technologically advanced environment, which leads to easy mass distribution of any content. So whereby in the past you knew that a DVD, if you locked it in a cupboard, a child will not be able to access it. Now you can't restrict children from accessing DVDs because they have cell phones. The research that we did indicated to us that children have, over 50% of children in the country have access to smartphones. So they can go on the internet anytime. You know, in the past, families would put a computer in the lounge to say a child will not access, but now those measures don't work because the cell phone is a tool that children have with them 24 hours a day without parental control. So if you look at there are approximately 12 million children, and you say 50% of these could potentially have access to a smartphone, not just any phone, so you can then see how much exposure to content that's on the internet can happen. And this for us says that there's a need to empower children to know about making the right choices and regulating themselves, because parents will not always be there anymore to monitor what children get up to and not get up to, because the cell phone is with the child even when the parent is not there. Other internal challenges that we experience because of the rapid developments in the industry as well and the limited resources that we have as an entity, we have limited capacity in terms of IT and research and industry-specific skills. So we are continuously having to work harder because we live in an industry that moves every now and again, as Mem has indicated, that some of what was a problem last year is no longer a problem now because industry has moved to other new media platforms. We've also seen a proliferation of content on various platforms locally and internationally, and unfortunately with the internet, you can't exactly restrict access. If something is available in the US, people here can access it. So we've had to look at, you'll see in the strategy that we are then saying, how do you cooperate with other regulators internationally and other providers of new media internationally to ensure that children are not necessarily exposed to undesirable content. So there's a greater need to educate children and parents. There's a greater need to have skills, systems, and processes that move with technological advancements. There's a greater need to cooperate with other regulators and partners, both nationally and internationally, to leverage resources, because as the Improvement Publication Board, we don't have all the resources that we require, and the powers, of course, where our legislation can't exactly reach. We also want, in the next 5 years, to improve compliance, industry compliance, in particular online distributors. We want to remain relevant and ensure that our classifications are in broad alignment to societal norms and values. So if we say something is a 10, we don't want society to come back and say, no, this can be a 10. It has to be a 16. So we want to ensure that the guidelines that we use are continuously tested against societal norms and values, and they are in broad convergence. There's a need also to automate our processes as well, because we work in a technologically advanced environment, and we want to focus on regulatory visibility and credibility. We want to improve our governance processes, compliance, and our accountability. We want to diversify our funding sources. As I've already indicated, we have limited funds allocation from the National Treasury, and even what we raise from industry is not sufficient to allow us to do all the things that we wish we could do to ensure effective regulation of the industry. Regulation of new media, in particular cyber safety of children, is a big, big area that we are focusing on as well, and just general management of performance information. the structure, the governance structures that we have in place, we have an appeals tribunal for any decisions that we make, and we have a council and council committee, council committees that are in place and functioning optimally, and we have a robust risk management regime in place. Now, in terms of the strategy, you will see that we have three outcomes. The first outcome being we want effective and visible regulation of films, games, and certain publications throughout the entire value chain. We have tended in the past to focus on just the distribution part of the value chain, but we've now extended with this strategy into content creation and producing to ensure that we keep undesirable content at production level to protect children and inform the general public. The next strategic outcome, I'll come back to the detailed programs. The next strategic outcome is we are saying that there's going to be an increased focus on informing the public and industry. The industry must also know that there's a regulator such as the FB, but members of the public must know so that they can assist us to regulate and ensure that children are consuming what is supposed to be consumed. And the last outcome is to ensure that we are managing our own internal processes. We have relevant systems and processes in place, and we have sufficient resources to manage and regulate the film and games industry. In terms of the first outcome, it has three programs, if you see. So it has one program, which we call industry compliance. Now, this program has three outcomes, and these outcomes focus mainly on content regulation, continuous evaluation of our ratings, industry compliance, and partnerships. So we want to, on content regulation, we want to implement a content classification and labeling initiative. We have been implementing this. This is what we do on a day-to-day basis. So we want to continue to do that in order to ensure that all films and games that are being distributed in South Africa are labeled, whether they are on an online platform or on a physical platform or on the old media type of platforms that we are accustomed to. Want to make sure that they are all classified and labeled to inform consumers before they can consume the content, to know that this one contains violence, this one contains. And our guidelines are out there, and I hope that members of the committee have already made inputs into our classification guidelines, which is what we use to classify this kind of content. So you'll see that we've widened the guidelines a little bit to say, you know, separate things like horror. We never used to indicate that this movie contains horror. Now we are suggesting that it should indicate that it contains horror. We are saying also separate violence from, don't just say violence, you must indicate is it sexual violence or not, because somebody who's been raped, for example, might not want to watch a movie that has sexual violence, yet if it just says violence. So we've broadened the guidelines, and we really want to call upon you to still comment on the guidelines so that we can ensure that they are in broad alignment with societal norms and values. So this will continue to do over the strategic period that we are talking about. I think we will have two reviews in terms of the annual performance plan. So we are reviewing them now, which they're out there now for public comment. We'll review them again in 2 years. And we want to continue to assess our ratings against the societal norms and values, as I've already highlighted. At the moment, we're sitting at 62% broad convergence with what society. This is where society looks at our ratings and says, are they in agreement or aren't they? And continuously, the comments that we get are that we should be more strict on violence and sexual adult content. So we continuously do these ratings at cinemas. We are busy with one now, and we've just finished surveying about 15,000 South Africans. The results of that survey will come out as well to see what do they think about our ratings. Mem highlighted that we want to review the legislation. We hope that in this period we will start a process of reviewing the legislation, because we feel that it is quite outdated on a number of areas. At the time that it was drafted, there were certain things that couldn't have been envisaged. For example, that children will go online and read newspapers, which may at times contain content that is not allowed. You know, we didn't know that there will be broadcasters who may want to put out adult content on TV and all those other things. So we do want to review legislation in this period. It's not immediately, but we want to begin a process towards a review of legislation to clarify what kind of content is regulated by the Film and Publication Board and to allow us to work with other regulators of content, such as broadcasters, to ensure that the South Korean society is exposed to the same content that is regulated in a similar manner. We want to implement also relevant initiatives that I get towards ensuring industry compliance, and we've put ourselves a target of 75% of those that we've already identified. So we have a database of those that we are saying these people are not complying, and we want to ensure that at least 75% of those are converted into compliant distributors. We continuously, some of the initiatives involve identification of these distributors, where they are, where are they distributing. Mm-hmm. As we've indicated, the online program, we're about to start to launch that one. So it's going to be a big factor throughout in identifying which distributors are online and are they complying with our legislation. And then we want to convert them to registrations and get them to classify. We'll also conduct compliance inspections and industry audits as well, just to continuously ensure that the general industry is complying, and will implement initiatives to ensure cyber safety or child online protection, as I've already highlighted. The details of what are we doing in what year are contained in the annual performance plans, which I believe have been distributed. But if there's any other questions on the issues, we can we welcome any questions in that regard. The last objective of this FEST program is to form and maintain national and international partnerships with identified key stakeholders, other regulators, industry players, and law enforcement agencies. MEM has already highlighted that we have working relations with the police, with ICASA, DOC, and many other government departments and other regulators. So we are working to turn these into memorandum of agreement so that we can clearly demarcate which areas are we agreeing and how are we going to collaborate. Other international partners such as your Google and your search, general search engines, because internet content has become a problem. So we are looking into how we can have agreements with them so that when we identify undesirable content that is being distributed and being accessed by South Africans, then we can have the search engines blocking it for the South African market. So we are looking at initiatives such as those, because the content that is available online is just horrific. I mean, some of the games that we come across, they are games that are accessible to all children that would say how to murder your teacher. So, I mean, what child is supposed to get to know how to murder a teacher? So content such as that, we want to ensure that it's not easily accessible to your ordinary young South African. The key initiatives in this regard involve developing strategic partnerships and stakeholder relations, and pursuing international regulatory alignment. So there's organizations internationally that we have identified that we feel that we should partner with to ensure that our regulation is effective. In terms of the second outcome, which is to ensure that consumers and general members of the public and industry are informed about the mandate of the FPB. I've already highlighted that no regulator can effectively regulate without ensuring that there's awareness about the regulatory mandate. So we have a big focus on that in this next 5 years. We want to implement regulatory repositioning initiatives and to conduct outreach and awareness programs in the communities. The details of what numbers we want to reach and all that are also contained in the APP. The last strategic outcome is where we want to improve our own internal efficiency and resourcing to ensure that we are better able to meet the demands of the huge mandate that we have. And we called that there's two programs in this outcome: organizational capacity and capability, and administration and governance program. In terms of the organizational capability and capacity, we want to implement a turnaround strategy. We've developed a turnaround strategy last year, and we want to implement it in order to ensure that we've rearranged our departments in such a way that they are able, I mean, our internal business units in such a way that they are able to better meet the mandate. There's HR improvement program and compliance program that we'll also implement, customer care skills development, and an internal communications program as well. We want to increase, and sorry, I think this is an error, it's supposed to be 2%. We want to increase the FEB revenue base by 2% through exploration of potential revenue generation streams and implement cost-saving measures. So in that one, we are looking at amending our current fee structures that industry pays to have their movies classified, and we want to identify and pursue new revenue generation sources, and we are busy with the research on how we can ensure that we at least increase the FPB financial resources through this regulation fee structure. IT as well is a big element that we want to focus on to ensure that we are implementing IT initiatives that are geared towards improvement of value and performance. As we've already highlighted, we are in a technologically advanced environment, and it's only proper that our systems as well must match the industry that we are trying to regulate. Lastly, we want to ensure that we conduct research in order to enhance online child protection and to inform regulation, our future regulation policy. Thank you. I'm going to hand over to the CFO to take you through. Oh, this is just the management structure that we've got. It's just slightly changed a little bit just to compress and ensure that we have a leaner management structure, and we've rearranged and we only have divisions that are relevant for the mandate. So you see that this aspect is a brand new aspect, the customer services one, where we have automated all our customer interaction processes, and we will be starting with implementation throughout this period.
Thank you. In terms of the budget, we get a budget allocation from Treasury through Department of Home Affairs. So for the next 5 years, as you can see, there's just a slight increase in terms of the budget that has already been allocated for the film and publication board. For the 2012-13 financial year, we expect 69 million from Treasury's budget from our internal covers, that is from the classification of movies, registration, annual renewals, and short-term investment. We envisage to generate 8.2 from classification fees. Though we have, as mentioned by the COO, that we have observed a slight decline in terms of the number of movies that have been physically being submitted for classification. In terms of registration fees, this comprises the registration of new movie distributors. We envisage that for the coming financial year, will generate 1.1. We have introduced another revenue generating stream from the previous financial year, that is the annual renewal. That is everyone who's registered on the as a movie distributor on the database will have to the anniversary of his distribution certificate, he has to renew the distribution. So we envisage that we'll collect 500,000 from that. So from short-term investment for the next financial year, for the 12-13 financial year, we invested to collect 200,000. In terms of the total revenue that we expect for the financial is 79.3. In terms of allocating the revenue that we invested to collect to different programs, in terms of personal expenditure, we projected that we'll spend 33.2 on operating expenditure. We
we budgeted 14.8 million on operating expenditure. On governance, that is the council audit committees and other council committee members, we invested that will spend 2.6. We have budgeted a further 7.2 on professional services. This includes internal audit services, external audit services, risk management, and some research that we normally outsource. And for communicating, marketing, and outreach, we budgeted 9.9 for the financial year. In terms of other special projects, we budgeted that for the new examiners reporting system will be spent in 2015, and for the online regulation system 140, monitoring system 200,000. So a total of 555,000 budget for other projects. In terms of the capital expenditure, we have budgeted that since we have just moved to new offices and then we have acquired some new assets and what have you, we only budgeted 800,000 for the current financial year for operational capital expenditure. In terms of our IT, we have budgeted that we allocate 2.3 in terms of upgrading our IT infrastructure to be in line with the market. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We've come to the end of the presentation. So now it's over to members to ask questions, to clarify matters that might not be clarified. Can I just see the hands of members? I have the Honourable Garcela first, then the Honourable McIntosh. Anyone else in this round? Honourable Bothman, Honourable De Freitas, and then Honourable Bothman, in that order.
And thank you, Chairperson. In acknowledging the good presentation, let me appreciate the fact that the briefing is enlightening. I mean, if you look, for instance, in the order of the kind of films and programs that we see on television, especially what is called Mzansi, I have seen so many terrifying programs there. And I'm not sure whether you have any way of ensuring that you get a space in there, because that is something that we need to ensure that we get into it. Because currently there is a council that is working with Gauteng Film Commission that takes stories from the street and then they take them and publish them directly to the Mzansi program. Now, those are likely to be taken via the camera from a smartphone, and then they take these and record them and they make them films. So if it continues to be allowed, as we have seen the proliferation of these, we are going to see rebellion in our homes. So I'm going to ask Chair that we strongly request that Film and Publications Board look into that space. In addition to that, this kind of relationship between SABC and other bodies that are relevant in the work of FPB, to what extent have you created or forged the memorandum of agreement or understanding rather with such, so that the work becomes easier? The last time we heard that you were making progress with the police, and there was also some discussions with regard to having similar talks with the education department. To what extent have you made progress in that? Thank you, sir.
Honorable
McIntosh? Thank you, Chair. I had three
questions. The CEO describes in strategic outcome one, said whilst implementing content regulation framework, etc., whilst ensuring 75% alignment between FEB classification decisions and societal norms and values. And she talks of societal norms and values earlier. Okay, for myself, I'm a Christian and I believe in families and marriage and so on. I'm not sure that everybody in the country does. So what I'm interested in is to know how you conclude what societal norms and values are. And if you're going to have a 75% alignment, you've got to make quite a strong decision on that. The next question is on blocking sites. Now, a friend of mine isn't too choosy about his sites, and he was very disappointed when he went to the Emirates and discovered he couldn't look at some of his sites because the Emirates blocked them. And I wondered if you've made investigations with other people about blocking sites, and also we interestingly in the DTI we've just done a study on online gambling, and the University of Johannesburg has a very interesting unit doing internet studies, and the professor Afonso Solops, he gave a very, very good presentation to us on this whole question of online gambling and internet. And, well, he had some interesting ideas, but basically he said the internet is a wild animal. I mean, you'll never control it. So you've got to have other ways of doing it. But anyway, that's just on the question of norms and then blocking sites. And then, you know, I have a few concerns about the budget. I suppose you could sum it up, is there much too many noughts? In the sense that if you see noughts in this large quantity, you're getting what we call a thumb suck on figures. And I think that the chief financial officer should try to explain to us, and also it's interesting to me that he has exactly spending exactly what he's got. So he's not got a surplus, and he's not got a loss. He's budgeted spot on with all his zeros. Now, that just makes me a bit nervous. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, with respect to the financial officer.
Thank you, Mr. Honourable De Freitas.
Thanks, Chair. Just a few questions. The presentation started off by talking about amending the logo in such a way that it wouldn't be copied. If you could just explain, how are you going to do that? I'm quite interested in that. And then, I'm a newbie in the committee, so maybe these are very elementary questions, but do you actually have people who sit and watch films and play games all day? You know, if you could just maybe just explain, just for my education. And if that is the case, how do you, I mean, you know, they'll then be watching and playing these games that could be quite sort of psychologically damaging. So how do you then deal with those people that are, whose job it is to watch these films that are maybe quite disturbing? Then you mentioned in your presentation partnerships. If you could just talk to us for what kind of partnerships. I would guess there are similar organisations such as yours that exist in other countries, and if you could just talk about that partnerships and how we can learn from them and vice versa. Then you mentioned something that and was mentioned a few times in the presentation where you says that the film or the game was submitted for classification. Are you saying that that the originator of the film or the game has to submit it? It's not automatic. In my mind, I thought it was just automatic, that when something is produced, it automatically has to come to you. You could just explain that. And then you also mentioned education programs, but not really unpack it, so if you could just talk about that. Because I'm also interested not only in educational programs for children and so forth, but for the actual parents, because if you educate the parents and make them aware of what is out there, that make your job a lot easier as well. And then you talk about a 2% revenue increase, where originally it said 20%. I was surprised that it's just 2%. So if you could just explain why 2%, how did it arrive at? I guess there's some kind of logic behind that. Also in the budget, this is my last question, Chair, sorry. In the budget, I see there's a few allied items that talk about research. If you could just describe what kind of research that you do. Thank you very much.
Honourable Bob.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, let me just highlight the issue of the budget. I'm not sure whether we should use these figures that are in here or the ones you've spoken to, because these ones, I think that's what we went through. So, but that, there's a difference of about 545,000 or so in terms of what you presented and what is in the book. There's an issue around registration, which I would want clarity in terms of registration for what we're not, what we want to understand. Remember, we're politicians, we want to understand what is actually going on there. And the issue on interest received, is it on the money that you have within your accounts, or is it from whatever that you have taken out and somebody's paying you? It's not clear because we don't have notes around that. And there's also a classification fee. So we also want that to be unpacked so that we understand what we are talking about if we talk about a classification fee. The other thing is the programs. There's a program that talks about, my understanding is that we're dealing with classification. And then the first program is on industry compliance. You know, administration is technical because you would imagine compliance and then classification, and then you don't see the two. How do they come together? We need a clarity in terms of, we understand that you want people to comply with what the age restriction or the registration things and bringing things forth for, so that we are able to follow whether what is contained here is actually going to meet what is there. But Chair, the other thing is, I'm sitting here closing my eyes and thinking about FPP as an ordinary citizen of South Africa. What is this? You know, a person, because I'm representing people out there in the streets. If I was not in this committee, if someone talks about FPP, would I know this thing? And how do we make ourselves visible and knowing so that the community becomes our assistant in terms of some of the things that may go without us knowing? And why I'm saying this is that, for instance, I'm not sure what are we doing in terms of music, whether it's part of this, because there's a lot of sexual art and nudity there and all those things, and I'm not sure. I've tried to check the guidelines, but I couldn't get the recent one. The one I saw was the one, the draft for 2003, and that was long time ago, so I couldn't actually get the current one, what is contained. But I picked up something that actually shocked me, because it was like, unless it is brought to your attention of somebody to inform you that there's a film coming or whatever, you are unable to then can classify something. Or so I would want us not to be followers, but to be a step ahead, because that on its own, that's why I agreed in terms of reviewing the regulations, the guides, and as well the act itself around this thing. The international relation that you might be having around the issue of classification. I'm trying to think, how many times or how much information do you have in terms of whatever that is departing from another country into our country? that relates to that, what are your linkages and your controls in terms of ensuring that whatever that comes into the country and that is within the country is actually gone through or has to go through you, so that you are sure that by the time it goes to the communities, it has all what you need to do on it. And lastly, the 75%. Normally, I'm realistic. I'm trying to say, we are saying we have a database as FPP for the people that we've targeted. But as politicians sitting here, we don't have that. And it's very difficult because our role is to oversee and see that what you have said you are going to do here has actually been done. We won't be able to assess that if we don't have the target people that you're going to deal with. Because you may come back and continuously point to same people every year to say these are the people that we have actually attended to, and we would not be able to follow if from time to time we don't get that information in terms of who are your targets for this year, so that next year as you give us the annual report, we are able to assess whether those are the real people that you have actually attended. Thank you, Chair.
I think we will first...
Just one thing, Chair. The other thing is the inspection on the ground. Because when I read the document, there's something that was indicated in terms of that, but you don't get the gist of what is going to be done to ensure that we have those on the ground working in terms of seeing some of the materials that have been leaked into the country without going through the process.
Okay, thank you. Can I see, are there anyone else now, apart from the people who have asked questions now, who want to ask a question? Then I'm going to not allow another round, but I will. What I will allow is follow-ups if you are not happy with an answer. So any further questions, Honourable Manisi? And that is it. So can you perhaps just ask your question and then we allow answers.
Thank you very much, Chair. I've got a few questions. I'm quite happy that you've made mention of the fact that reviewing of legislation is needed, and I think it's long overdue because we need to be in line with what is happening today. I just want to check, how is compliance by different companies to FPP? Is there any enforcement by the FPP? Does FPP have teeth to bite? I just need an explanation in that one. I also like to know if you have awareness programs on the ground to teach ordinary community members and maybe children at school about your program. My last one is, why is there no division of revenue per program or strategic objectives given in the strategic performance plan? Because this makes monitoring of service delivery more difficult. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Just before I give you opportunity to answer, there's only one thing I want to know, and that is, it seems that you have quite a mammoth task in view now of the internet and everything. Do you have the necessary capacity, the necessary numbers of staff, but also the necessary capacity and skills to deal with these matters, all these matters that you've identified? So if you can please then answer these questions, then what I will do is I will allow follow-ups for the people that have, for those who want to do that, if only if someone is not satisfied with an answer. Thank you.
Chairperson, they will answer all the difficult ones. Just allow me to deal with the general comments. The first one is that it's very difficult to always come to the portfolio committee and complain about financial resources. We've always talked about that, and we really feel that maybe we shouldn't now be talking about the fact that the mandate is big and we don't have sufficient funds. We have reached a point where we're saying with the limited budget that we have put forward and the resources that have been made available to us, we shall do the best. And what we did as council, we have said, let's try and encourage partnership so that whatever it is that you do is matched by what we can get from our partners in terms of visibility, platforms, and financial implications thereof, which then brings me to visibility. Visibility usually goes with how much you have. There's nothing as difficult as advertising space. It's very, very costly. We actually work with communities where you don't get much. You'll see us on television programs, on radio once in a while, but putting an advert is a very, very expensive exercise. So we've tried to use alternative ways of making ourselves known through partnerships, through working with traditional leaders, working with the industry itself, targeting a few journalists here and there, and working with our other partners in government when there is a raid so that we are there, we are mentioned when there are issues, who are also visible. It is our wish. If we really had the money, we would be flooding the market with information, with education, but we just don't have those resources. So we may sometimes be reactive, but we try to be proactive, especially on this one of child online. We have tried as much as possible to be ahead of the game with all our international partners. I would also like to put it on record that we work within a framework of the Constitution. When we debate these issues a lot within council, because we are actually not a censoring institution. We are an institution that informs. So it's only when the content is illegal that it has to be referred to the police. So some things border on legality and they get away with it in the industry. And some of these sites, they will explain, are hosted outside of the country. So we have to have partners with people outside. They'll explain as well how we have established partnership with organizations outside so that we can inform whatever country that you have a site that is illegal in South Africa, do something about it. And what is illegal in South Africa may not be illegal in another country. So those are some of the challenges that we are facing. But we do straddle the issue of the freedom of expression versus the rights of a child and the rights of an individual, which is why it is important to inform a person so that people know if they go to a movie and it offends them, then they at least they would have been informed that that movie is not good for a child. So if they insist on getting to that movie, because some parents who are told by the industry, they argue at the door, they say, I want to watch this movie, and I'm an adult, I know what is good for my child. So sometimes they let them go, but at least they've been informed that, well, that's your choice, but this is what we are informing you. So I would like my colleagues to just get into the rest of the debate.
Thank you, Chair. I will start with some of the operational, the operations-related questions, and then the CFO will deal with the financial ones. In terms of the proliferation of undesirable content on TV, certainly we have also noted that, and on various occasions we do actually write to broadcasters or the BCCSA and complain about the content. I think even in the last time
in the committee, we were requested to look at the content of Pastor Mboro, because some people felt that it was also not desirable. But what this speaks to is also legislation again, that legislation was separated the regulation of content on broadcasting platforms from other content. So FPB regulates all other content except broadcasting content in terms of classifying it. So what we are then trying to do is we are trying to look at a single classification system, content classification system for the country. So we are working with broadcasters, and we've just made input into the ICASA because they are revising their regulation of broadcasters. We've just made input to suggest that we want a single system that regulates content throughout the country. It doesn't matter which way, which platform it is, because sometimes the same movie on TV gets a different rating than it would in cinema. So we are trying to look at all that thing in terms of cooperation at the level of us, the operators. But of course, when we look at legislation, I think this issue will be one of the issues that we are proposing to say, how do we make sure that all content, despite platform, is regulated in the same manner, and to ensure that people are protected. So we are working with ICASA to look at the issue of single classification. We've already commenced with engagements, and we are hoping to conclude an MOU with them to ensure that broadcasters are regulated in that platform. We are also engaging industry themselves, so we are talking to broadcasters, we are talking to film distributors to see how can we work together with the limited powers that we have at the moment. So I think in the next 3 months we should conclude an MOU in that regard. We've already started with engagements. In terms of our relationship with the police, there were quite a few delays because we are not agreeing on various areas, but we have now come to an agreement, and I think I stand to be corrected, but I think the agreement would have been signed in this week with the police, just on collaboration on child pornography as well. We've agreed on everything. We've signed the agreement, we've given it to them, and they had said it would be signed, I think, today or yesterday, I can't remember. So I must just verify, but we've agreed on everything. I think we can almost confirm that it's signed. DOE, we have not commenced official engagements around how these issues can be incorporated into life skills, the curriculum, because we feel that children need to be educated, and we can't just do ad hoc education, in awareness programs. We need to have it in the curriculum, so we are working. It's part of the strategic plan now that we will be doing, and we've already requested assistance from our executive authority to engage the ministers as well, so that we can be able to ensure that we conclude an agreement. Societal norms and values, we don't have a standard societal norm and value necessarily, because like you say, people sit on opposite ends. Some are very, very liberal, some are quite conservative. So what we say, as long as we achieve broad convergence, and we have put measures in place to highlight to us what do we mean by broad convergence. For example, if we regulate, we use classification guidelines to classify a movie to say, is it a 10, is it an A, or is it suitable for people over 16. So once we've done that, we then go into, that movie is released at a cinema or on a DVD or it's on TV or whatever. So when that movie is out there, we do research. So we'll do surveys, various surveys. Maybe it's on cinemas, and then we're going to check. You as a member of the public, we've said this movie is suitable for children under 10. And we've said that it contains violence, it contains sex, it contains nudity. Are you in agreement, or do you feel you should have given it another age rating? And if so, what age rating would you have given it, and why? So we collect that information, and then we analyze it, and then we will say, okay, we've surveyed for this year 15,000 people, and the 15,000, out of that, 62% is in broad agreement with us on this thing. Maybe 25% feels we are too lenient on the movies that we classify. So we are talking to broad convergence, because certainly we can't achieve a complete alignment with because the values in society are quite different as well. In terms of blocking of sites, blocking of sites is not an issue that is easy to achieve. So we are not going to just block sites. What we do is we engage the people who have created the content. For example, the game that we are talking about, that we say, how to murder your teacher. We ask ourselves, what value is it to anybody, this game? Is it of value to anybody in society? We think not, but we then go back, what does the legislation say? So the legislation will say, anybody over 18 can access this content. But we think it's not suitable for children under 18, for example. So how do we block that child from accessing this content? We can't, because at the moment we don't have age verification systems as perhaps other countries would have, and we are working towards such a system. So in the absence of that, we can make liaise with the search engines to make it not to easily pop up when you are searching under, you know, when you are on the internet and you go to Google and you say, violent games or teacher, it mustn't be the first thing that comes up. So it must be the very last thing, maybe number 1 million and what. So it's those kind of arrangements that will enter into. The ultimate goal is to have age verification systems, but they are content that is illegal, certainly will be referred to the police. So and once the police have agreed, there's measures, there's a way to ensure that it's taken off the internet in terms of the ECT Act. But for the moment, we are just talking around deprioritizing it so that it doesn't pop up as the first element on the search level. The budget, I think I'll leave to the CFO. The issue of the logo, when you go into a movie or a cinema, let's say, or when you buy a DVD, you'll see that it has an FEV logo at the back, and it will say it's a 10, or and it will say it's got violence or something like that. That's the logo that we are talking about. So we are saying we don't want anybody to be able to reproduce that logo. Because if you go to the streets now, people who are selling at the robots, they have that logo. So for an ordinary consumer who doesn't know whether this is the right logo or not, they just think, oh, this thing has been classified, only to find that it hasn't. So we want to do like the FIFA did with the 2010 logos and stuff, that not anybody can reproduce it. They need permission from the FPB. We've already commenced with that process, and I think the logo registration is almost completed. We are now on the slogan, we inform, you choose. And then once all that is concluded, then we will begin the restriction of the use of the FPB logo by anybody without permission. It's just to assist us to regulate the industry and not have everybody replicating that process. The process of classification of games, what happens, and I'll talk to this along with the registration process so that you can understand. So if somebody, an entrepreneur today, opens a company, they want to distribute films to South Africans. Maybe let's say they want to own a video shop. I'm just going to use that as an example. So they need to come to FPB and say, I want to open a video shop, what do I need to do? Then we say, okay, you must first register as a distributor of games. So they will then pay an amount that the CFO was talking about and get a registration number, so they are allowed to distribute. Once they are allowed to distribute, any film that they need to distribute to the public, they must bring it to us to look at it and say, this is suitable for people under 10, this is suitable for people under 16. So we call that classification. So they first register, and then they can only bring each title for classification. Once they've done that, the monitoring that we're talking about, the industry monitoring that we're talking about, we go to each and every video shop out there, each and every cinema out there, and say, and look if they have that FPB logo at the back on their DVD, if it's got the right number that we've given it, because once we classify, we give it a number, and if they have their registration certificate on the wall prominently displayed to show that they are allowed to be in the business that they are in. So we have been focusing on the physical platforms like your shops and your cinemas, and we are now wanting to move online, because we've noticed that a lot of the distribution is happening online. Okay, debriefing of classifiers. It's true that classifiers are exposed to quite a content that can be harmful, perhaps. And we have what we call compulsory debriefing programs that would happen 4 times a year. We would call a professional like a psychologist or social worker to talk to them and use the processes that are allowed to debrief them. And then if they require additional sessions out of that, because that one is just a general session, then we will then arrange in terms of our wellness program. So we do have that in place. International partnerships, how can we learn from them? We are continuously learning from different countries. Sometimes we just do desktop research and we check on the internet, how do they do this in the UK, how do they do this in the US, or even other African countries. Say. Oh, okay, sorry. And but sometimes we also do study tours where we learn how others do it, and so that we can always improve our systems and ensure that we are benchmarking against some of the best practices around the world. And yeah, the In Hope that Mem was talking about, we are a member of In Hope, which is a body that deals, a global, an international body that deals with illegal content on the internet. So what they do is, if you come across child pornography on the internet, you can report it to them, and then they will, through their different memberships, there's about 32 countries that are members, so they can then report it to that country. Let's say I find a website, some of you might be aware of a website called O-Toilet that was in South Africa, and it was having undesirable content. So we would come across such a website, we would report it to the South African police, who will then work with their own processes to try and close it. If they can't, we also report it at the same time to In Hope, because we are a member, and then they'll say, okay, this website is hosted in Russia, so how do we block it? Because from South Africa, we can't block it, so they'll use their own networks through the Russian member hotline to close off that website. So it just ensures that there's a quicker way of shutting off websites that contain undesirable content. Education and awareness programs, we continuously, we've been doing this for the past, I think for the past 10 years, we are continuously doing education and awareness programs. I think last year we reached about 60,000 members of the public directly. We educate children, we educate parents, teachers, childcare workers, everybody, traditional leaders, anybody that we can get our hands on, religious leaders as well, just to ensure that there's awareness in society around what FPP deals with. Research, we do different kinds of research just to assist us to be targeted in our own mandate. The recent research that we did, for example, would have been research that showed us that how is content currently being consumed. Because if we are to regulate content, we must know where is it found, how do young people access content. And this is the same research that showed us that, in fact, young people have cell phones, not just young people in urban areas, but young people in rural areas. And they don't just have any cell phone, but smartphones, which means they can go on the internet and access any other content. It will show us how much are young people going to cinemas. And so we do research. Every year we will identify what research areas. So the recent one is that one of how do young people consume content. Ordinary member of the street, how do they know about FPB? Is through these awareness programs that we do. We go everywhere throughout the country, rural areas, all provinces, and we can give detailed numbers if members want that kind of detail. In terms of music, at the moment, we only classify music to the extent that it's a documentary or something, like if it's a video, music video or something like that, we'll classify it. If it's lyrics, it's only if somebody can complain about it, write to us and say, there's this kind of song and it's containing this kind of music, that we would look at. But the actual videos, we classify all of them, the actual music videos. how are movies, how do movies come to our attention? If movies are coming in the country, obviously we have a relationship with SARS Customs, and then they, when they see a large contingent of movies, sometimes they hold them, we've got an agreement, they hold that container and they say, show us the FPB registration, and they contact us, are you aware of this distributor, do they bring, you know, they're bringing this kind of movies, and they can hold those movies until this person brings the movies to FPB to classify before they come into the country. So we have that kind of arrangement with movies coming into, and we only are only required to classify movies that are going to be distributed to South Africans. So if it's movies from South Africa going outside, we don't have to classify them. Registrations have dealt with that. Interest and revenues, CFO will deal with it. Industry compliance, I think I've touched on it, unless if you want more information. I've touched on international partnerships. Compliance monitoring targets and legislative review enforcement. Okay, the compliance monitoring targets, we set targets annually to ensure that we will check if industry is complying. So we will have targets around how many visitations and inspections do we want to do for the year. For example, last year we would have said we want to do 8,000 visits to different shops throughout the country, video shops throughout the country. So we will then see how much of that would we reach. Now this 75%, let me just look at what it says now. To implement relevant initiatives geared towards ensuring at least 75% industry compliance. So we are, this one only refers to those that would be on our database. So as they do these visitations, let's say they say 8,000 for the year. So they go into the shops and they do 8,000 inspections of different shops. When they come across non-compliance, immediately we put that person on our database. And it's against that database that we are continuously saying we want to convert them to either a new registration of a shop that will then comply, or we work with the police to shut them down. So I'm not sure how we can, with our quarterly reports to the executive authority, we do report on what is the progress. I'm not sure how members perhaps want us to give them that information. Yeah, it's available. I think that's everything.
Do we have keys?
Or enough resources, capacity, and everything.
And legal teeth
in terms of all content, because we want, for us, if we are about protecting children and informing the public, we want to ensure that all content has been classified before it's consumed by members of the public. So we don't have teeth for all content. We've got teeth for some of the content, but not for all of the content. And when we do legislative review, we will highlight. But off the top of our heads is to say that as much as the legislation says FPB regulates pornography, there is, for example, differences around do we regulate pornography when it's on TV, because we don't regulate TV. So that would be an area where we would feel, okay, we want it to be made quite clear that, because in our own interpretation of the legislation, all pornography should be regulated by FPB. And if FPB has set regulations that you can't distribute pornography on this kind of platform, we don't expect any other distributor, be they a broadcaster, to do that. So it's just a matter of clarifying that issue. We also would like some teeth that says, because the legislation at the moment has then said, okay, all newspapers are not to be brought to FPB, but then you then have the situation of the Sowetan that then goes and publicizes content that we feel is undesirable for exposure to children. So what do we do as FPB? Our hands are tied because legislation said exclude them. So we want to say, okay, exclude them, but if they transgress certain things, such as exposing children to adult content, can FPB perhaps have some power to be able to penalize them because their own penalties are not sufficient. So those are some of the powers that we would wish we had. Skills and capacity, we try and make do with what we've got. Hence, we are focusing a lot on partnerships at the moment because we've noticed that in terms of the current resources, it's not enough to, because the mandate increases every single day. So we need quite a lot of resources, and we would hopefully be coming back to us for more resources. But in the meantime, we are also looking at creative ways, such as through partnerships, to ensure that we achieve what is required. I hope I've answered all questions.
Yeah, thank you. In terms of the first question on the deficit or the surplus, we compile our budget based on the guidelines provided by the National Treasury. So in terms of National Treasury guidelines, we are not allowed to budget for either a deficit or a surplus. Hence, our budget seems to give an impression that we are going to spend whatever we are going to have at our disposal. On the issue of the 2% revenue increase, one of the issues that we're looking on is on the after the logo has been registered, we ever want to use the logo to attach to the DVDs. We wanted to sell the stickers to those people. And then one of the issues was the issue of express classification and express registration. That means, for instance, a distributor will submit maybe a DVD today and say it must be classified today, so we'll charge an extra fee to that particular distributor. On the issue of registration, classification, and interest, I think COS charge on registration, we charge 825 for registration of a new distributor, and then annually it has been 125 annually that they have to renew their distribution license. And classification, because we have a tariff structure that characterizes various movies in terms of adult content, we charge a particular amount. Locally produced film, we charge a particular amount. So those we call the classification fees. On interest, since the past two financial years, we haven't been classifying on any credit. So in terms of the APB Act, we have to pay upfront before we can classify for you. So the interest that you earn is the money that we put in short-term investment, money market, and fixed-term deposits. We put what we don't need that month in a fixed-term deposit, so we'll check that on a regular basis. But any sufficient cash that we don't need that particular time, we'll put away to an interest. Yeah.
Okay, honorable members, I will allow now only to the members who ask questions. If you were not satisfied with one of those answers, then you can ask a question, follow up, not a new question, only in relation to the questions and answers. Honourable Bothman seems to have a follow-up. Anyone else? Only Honourable Bothman. Thank you.
Okay. Now, Chair, first of all, let me say what we have just done now is what we had expected to be in this document. You've just told us the program. And that's why I was asking the programs that we have here. We do not see how that is going to impact to the society. But the unpicking is what we expected should be here. So that because this document is going to be a public document after it has been adopted, they won't be here in this room to understand all these things. These are the questions they're going to ask themselves, and no one will be there to answer that. But Chair, the follow-up is on the issue of education that has been done, and we do not get as to how, which is the critically more important thing. We understand it's done, we meet with religious leaders, traditional leaders, and what, but what is this workshops, is this, you know, pamphlets, information dissemination, is this, we don't understand that. I think that's what should be in the POA in terms of what you actually do. But that is critically important, because if we go out there and want to check what you people are doing, we must be able to say, you said you're going to distribute pamphlets in this section, and here we are, people know nothing about that. Or you said you ran a workshop there, and nobody knows anything about that workshop. But we can't do that if it's just education is done, you know, in traditional, with traditional leaders and what they do. We would not know as to what kind of education is really being done. Is it through platforms and meetings where you require a slot just to talk to people about FPD or what? I think it's critically important for us to understand that. The other one is on the issue of SARS. Some of us have been at the borders, and I think we've seen what is happening there. I think even things that we thought SARS itself has to do, they're not doing them, let alone delegation of another, of somebody else's responsibility. So I think we need to, we know the agreement is there, but if I'm unable to do my own job, how do I then ensure that what you are agreeing with me that it should be an additional task for me to assist is being done? Then how do you see yourself improving on that in terms of ensuring that FPB on its own? Let us exclude the issue of budget for now, because we normally say program will be the one that informs the budget. But if we can put the budget first, then we may lose the direction. It's important for us, as if we have to motivate for additional budget, we need to put something in place and say, these are the requirements. Is it a need for you as FPB that there should be some people for you representing yourselves in certain areas? There should be some foot soldiers on the ground to ensure that whatever that may not have been confiscated at the border gate or wherever, or that may have been generated within the country and had not come to your offices, somebody picks it up on the ground. Somebody must be there on the ground, not only when you decide that you're going to go out, but I have a feeling that somebody has to be there on the ground from time to time. What is it that is actually needed for you to be able to implement this plan that you are having? I think that is critically important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of unpacking the programs, I think in the APP we just gave targets of how many people want to reach through various programs, but how we generally reach the programs is we would have workshops in communities. Certainly, we have what we call a back to school campaign, where when schools open, we go to schools and we have talks around cyber safety, around classification of content. So we didn't. It's always an issue of how much do you put on the APP, but we normally unpack it in the business unit itself. So like if you see now for this year, they will have 500,000 people reached through awareness programs. If you go to the business unit level, it will say how exactly are they going to unpack that, but maybe we can in future improve it and ensure that it's actually prominently highlighted here. We would have awareness programs on national days, on like your 16 days of activism. We would have programs throughout that week. Child Protection Week would have programs that go to different communities and create awareness. We go to churches and speak in different churches around issues of
cyber safety. We go to platforms that are created by traditional leaders for us throughout the country. But I take the point that it's not unpacked on the APP itself. In terms of SARS, it's a resourcing issue at the moment because we have only 17 monitors that have to take care of the entire country. So they do have a program where they actually, on a certain day, go and spend the day at the border, whatever border that's next to them, depending on their work plans. So they would sit at the border and just randomly check different goods that are coming through. But we've had to rely on the relationships that we have developed with customs in order to know on any other day, you know. But we focus a lot on airports and to make sure that thing. What is required for us to be able to do this? Certainly, if we could have more compliance monitoring capacity, it would help us to be able to be at the various border posts, because it's not just airports. We are now at the moment focusing mostly at airports because of capacity issues, and we're saying, okay, a lot of traffic is at the airport, so let's check those. But I mean, we could be losing out on what's going through the sea and all those issues. So certainly it's just more compliance monitoring capacity that we require.
So we thank FPB for your presentation and all the best with the spending of that budget. We will in due course hear how you've spent it and make sure that we follow up on the matters that have been raised today as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I think we will allow a 5 minutes, but only a 5 minutes break, comfort break, quickly. But in 5 minutes we're going to start again, so those who are outside then must just not think that we are nasty or something. But in 5 minutes we'll start. Thank you.
Let me ask Taki to do
What's the most?
Thank you, honourable members. We can continue, and we welcome the government printing works in our midst. We have with us Professor Anthony Mbewu, the CEO, Mr. Rossi Barma, the GM, I suppose that's General Manager, Financial Services, Mr. Jan Rousseau, Acting Director, Human Resources, and Mr. Andries Malsona, the Factory Manager of GPW. So, we hand over to you for your presentation. We see that it's quite a professional printed presentation, as we expect from the governing printing works. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, for this opportunity to present on the Strategic Plan 2012-2013 to 2014-2015 of the Government's Printing Works. This Strategic Plan, Honourable Members, focuses on specific processes. Firstly, where the organisation wants to be in the medium to long term. Secondly, a critical assessment of its current status. And then thirdly, it outlines measurable targets for the organization. The operating model that GPW has embraced is that of a government component. What that means is that this is a state-owned enterprise that implements sound financial management, i.e. is a profitable and sustainable entity, but is able to cultivate a commercial-oriented culture. And furthermore, focuses on its core business, that of security printing, for government, for the country, and for other stakeholders. Our vision as an organization is to be the state's mandated security printer. Our mission is to provide cost-effective, reliable, and timely services in security printing to all spheres of government. Secondly, to provide the public with valuable information. And then thirdly, to disseminate government information through technology, innovation, and service excellence. In order to reach this vision and undertake this mission, we embrace four core values: that of reliability, of integrity, of accuracy in our work, and of stakeholder satisfaction. We have various key strategic objectives that we have outlined in our strategic plan. The firstly is around the issue of production process optimization. As the Honourable Members know, a few years ago we were allocated the Visakhi Street premises that used to be the government garages and have been in the process of renovating this as the new headquarters for GPW. Secondly, we are developing appropriate facilities in those premises for efficient and cost-competitive production. Our aim is to embrace best practice for high-security printing in that environment. And in order to do that, we've undertaken, together with Department of Public Works, site survey and needs analysis of the Sahi Street premises. And already pavilions 1 and 2 have been opened there, and the passport factory is functioning there and security printing. And we would welcome the honorable members to visit that facility at some point in the near future. Our budget in this production process optimization is of the order of 585 million rand over the medium term expenditure framework. Our second key strategic objective is about the asset replacement program, which concerns replacement of our dated technology and machinery. The average lifespan of such printing technology is about 30 years, and the majority of the machines that we have at the Bosman Street premises in our old building are in poor condition and not economically viable to maintain. Furthermore, there have been technological advances in the printing industry over the last 20 years, which we have to follow. And in certain areas, we have a lack of capacity to produce high-security printed matter. It's important that our security printing should be in line with international standards. And in this respect, our assets replacement program outlines a spend of 310 million rand over the medium-term expenditure framework. Our third key strategic objective is that of ICT governance. We want to ensure that our information communication technology practices are legally compliant with all the various aspects that are outlined in the slide, from MISS, ECT, etc., etc. Also, our strategic plan is to acquire hardware and software to accommodate new IT systems and services. And this means that involves ensuring that we have business continuity solution that supports redundancy and functionality with recovery in ICT, that we acquire and implement new hardware and software, that we have optimal activities to ensure systems and infrastructure operate at prescribed service levels, and also that we are capable of business recovery with failover and minimize downtime at our remote locations. Thirdly, in technology migration, we are automating the official Gazette content distribution through the Electronic Government Gazette, which will be available on the website for honorable members and other stakeholders in the country. Fourthly, in IT, it's important that we engage in resource management, which involves a proper IT sourcing strategy and related vendor management processes. Also, that as well as hardware and software, people management in IT is important in terms of attracting, retaining, and training technical people who have depth in their respective areas and breadth across other areas in IT that are not their specialty. It's important that we link individuals and team objectives to a shared GPW IT vision and strategy and a reward, and that we reward them according to their performance. And it's important that we have effective IT asset management also. And then the fourth key strategic objective is that around the GPW establishment, which we did brief the portfolio committee on several weeks ago. This means fully implementing the new GPW structure, and this means migrating staff to that new approved structure and ensuring that this is done according to GPW, that GPW aligned policies are developed, and that there is talent management and leadership development, and also that special dispensations are negotiated and implemented where appropriate in order to ensure that the correct technically trained people are there to operate the new machines that are purchased, and that there is equitable and correct performance management within this new GPW establishment. Fifthly, we plan over the next few years to ensure that we have a proper marketing division which is involved in consolidation of business opportunities and customer focus, that develops the GPW brand, that ensures that there's local customer retention, but also that we source new local business development and develop an aggressive regional marketing policy strategy on face value documents within the Southern African region. These are objectives that will ensure organic growth and a financially vibrant organization. And the next, and in order to achieve our vision, in order to ensure that these strategic objectives that I've outlined are able to be deployed, we will undertake the following areas of strategic implementation. Firstly, strategic implementation in operations management. And as I've mentioned, this involves replacing our data technology and machinery, optimization of production capacity and efficiencies in order to be cost-effective, cost-competitive rather, ensuring that we produce high-quality security products, such as passports, ID documents, and the like, and that we achieve product and service excellence. In strategic implementation, it's important that financial management embraces accurate planning and forecasting, maintains optimal cash flows and working capital, manages financial risks, and implements the new enterprise resource planning system. And also that we reduce auditor general findings and qualifications. Then thirdly, in strategic implementation, cost management is important in terms of changing or reviewing the cost product pricing systems and strategies, reducing wastage and spoilage. And then in strategic implementation, governance is critical. And this involves enablement of high-level information security and control, and minimizing harm to GPW's business from potential vulnerabilities and threats. Next, strategy formulation and planning is key. A common framework for inclusive, business-aligned, operational, and tactical decision-making needs to be in place. And we need to have IT that is security-minded, performance-based, and aligned to GPW's business. There also needs to be architecture management in terms of the integrated environment with scalable and optimized processes in ICT. I've already mentioned the enterprise resource planning and IT technical delivery, and this will mean properly coordinated portfolio of IT projects and an efficient and efficient enterprise resource planning system running on a secured infrastructure on a self-defending network, and also a centralized and efficient help desk and service management processes. Continuing with ICT are the issues of resource management. There needs to be proper IT sourcing strategy and related vendor management processes, as I mentioned before, attraction, development, and retention of good IT skills, and effective IT asset management. In terms of service delivery in IT, there need to be effective IT services, delivery and support, well-coordinated user training and support, and centralized and efficient help desk and service management processes. Supply chain management is critical in our business, and this is important in terms of reducing stock levels, phasing out slow-moving items and redundant stocks. It's important in terms of strategic supplier management, adherence to the revised broad-based black empowerment, economic empowerment guidelines that have come from Treasury, in terms of updating and developing electronic supplier database and order information, and in terms of contract and service level agreement management. The other aspect of our strategic implementation plan revolves around human resources and transformation. And as I've mentioned under the strategic objectives, this means fully implementing the new GPW structure. And this involves finalizing the outstanding job descriptions and continuing with the job evaluation process. It also involves migrating staff to the government component in terms of implementing the migration plan, in terms of consultations with labor, and in terms of communication strategy to our employees about the process of migration. The GPW aligned policies, as I've mentioned, in human resources and transformation need to be revised, developed, and customized to GPW. Then in terms of talent management and leadership development, we're engaging in training partnerships and assuring that we measure the time spent on training and ensuring that it's adequate. I've mentioned that we are in the process of negotiating special dispensations with the assistance of Department of Home Affairs in terms of critical jobs. Also in terms of determining which category of jobs dispensation is in line with the broader public service jobs, and negotiating with the Department of Public Service Administration for such special dispensations. Again, human resources and transformation, we're implementing performance management in terms of job descriptions and alignment of the work plans. In the security domain, obviously critical in an organization that professes to be a security printer, it's important that we continue with what we have undertaken in terms of a comprehensive and thorough security risk assessment, ensuring that there's new updated physical, personnel, production, and documentation security systems in place, and also that we introduce a vetting system for key personnel, not only senior management, but also personnel in supply chain management, as the President and the Minister of Finance have instructed. Obviously, in a security printer, internal audit is critical, and our internal audit department is developing internal audit and risk management plans and assisting us to ensure compliance with PFMA and related regulations. I've already mentioned on the strategic objectives that we wish to implement a proper marketing strategy, and that will advertise the expanded range and value of products that we will provide for stakeholders both in government and wider field, and also market our sophisticated printing services, for example, upgrading of the social security forms, and possibly market our services to governments within the SADC region who do not have access to modern printing facilities. And so that, honourable members, is an outline of our strategy in terms of our vision and our mission, in terms of the strategic objectives that we've identified, and in terms of the strategic implementation plan that we will undertake in order to deploy those strategic objectives. And there are a few key projects that we should perhaps mention in terms of the strategic plan over the next 2 years. We've already mentioned that at the Visakhi Street site, we have installed and are commissioning a new security printing division as well as a passport factory. There's the possibility of a new ID smart card, which the Department of Home Affairs hope to implement. There's the implementation of the e-gazette, which will take place over the coming months. We're ensuring that we have the capacity to print passport and visa pages in-house. In the past, we've had to obtain the security paper from the South African banknote company. We're implementing a new enterprise resource planning system in order to integrate the various management information systems from finance across to human resources and to production operations, and also externally as well as internally. And as I've mentioned, we're busy developing a new facility at Visakhi Street with the assistance of the Department of Public Works. At this point, with your permission, Honourable Chair and members, I'll hand over to my General Manager for Financial Services to outline the budget.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. As far as the budget of the government printing works concerned, on page 14 of the presentation, you will see that we've highlighted as part of the asset replacement program that the CEO has spelled out as one of our strategic objectives, some of the machinery that we are planning to acquire in the next couple of years. It must just be said that one is to understand that all these objectives, most of them needs to dovetail all the time in order for the other objectives to be implemented. And there's an example there of the procurement of the of these assets is then dependent upon the development then of the SAG fleet, because that's where these assets will be put to work. Furthermore, as far as some of the other projects is concerned, I've got specific slides on the ERP solution, the e-gazette solution, if the members would require to go through that. But just mainly, what we're implementing as far as the ERP system, we got at GPW currently 11 silo systems. Those systems are not integrated at all. And if I may take the members back to, I think it's about the 2008 year, where we, for a number of years, had all these qualifications. Now, we've made big strides as far as the qualifications from the Auditor General is concerned. The problem, however, is that if we need to get to the point where we implement effective customer service delivery, we need to have systems that we can plan accordingly and deliver the service that we're planning to deliver and be able to measure all those things. And it's very difficult with 11 silo systems that you find very difficult to synchronize all the time. And this is the main reason for the ERP solution that we're implementing, is to, in order to create a solution where we've got one system, we'd also alleviate obviously all the other problems that we currently have of duplicate data capturing and misinformation and all those other kind of advantages that we'll get through the system. It's quite an extensive exercise. We started in 2010 with the ERP implementation, and the first year we spent basically as to go through what we would call the as-is of at the moment. GPW is an organization that some of the processes are quite involved, so one needs to fully understand it before you even contemplate implementing a new system. We're in a stage now with the ERP implementation where technically the systems are, some portions of the systems are ready to go and some others will be in the next month or two. By the end of May, the whole system should be ready to go. We face some challenges as far as implementation thereof is concerned, in that we still got some capacity issues that we need to address within GPW, and that's specifically referring to skills. As far as the ERP project is concerned, after Gazette is concerned, we're launching on this coming Thursday. The GPW, maybe I should just say that first. We want to make the whole process of the Gazette electronic, from the input side all the way to the distribution and the output side of the Gazette. We get, at the moment, we get, as far as the input side is concerned, it from various sources. It could be by way of email, it could be by way of documents that's hand delivered, it could be via fax, it could be via desks. And we need to take all that information and collate it and then eventually come up, I don't want to go through the whole process, but then come up to the Gazette and then distribute the Gazette as well. That is quite a costly exercise, and as the committee would know, that the GPW basically charge a nominal value of R5 per Gazette. Now, if you take the last year, if you received all the Gazettes that were published, you would have roughly received 110,000 A4 pages, which is enormous. What we are kicking off on Thursday, if I may come back to that, we are kicking off a pilot project with the help of all the different sectors that provide input. So whether it's a bank or a newspaper or an attorney firm or a department, whatever, we've selected a few. And we want to start a pilot project where we can see whether it's possible that we simplify and standardize the input forms, if you may use that term. We've got currently about 72 input forms, We've already went through extensive exercises because a department that plays a major role is, for example, justice. They got specific forms that they want to utilize. So it's not just for us changing forms. We need to involve quite a lot of people. So we kicking off a project, a pilot project, and hopefully at the end of this all, what we'll have is within the next couple of months, we'll get to the point if we can establish all the infrastructure required, the electronic gazette. So anybody will be able to download the gazette from the net. We will obviously still continue to print the gazette for those who wishes to have a printed gazette. And we are currently in discussions with Treasury as to what should be the fee for the electronic gazette versus what should be the fee then for a printed gazette. Because obviously it costs quite a lot of money to produce a printed gazette. That is just a summary as far as the two major projects at the moment is concerned. As far as the budget specifically is concerned, if I may also, Chairperson, with your permission, refer the committee back to 2008. I think GPW, besides all the qualifications from the Auditor General, weren't in a very good financial position as such. Part of the plan over the last couple of years is not just to get away from the qualifications issued by the Auditor General, but also to put the organization on a sound financial foot. I'm glad to report today that where we are as far as the GPW and the financial standing of the organization is concerned, you'll see on page 16 that we've agreed with Treasury that the transfer that they've made in the last couple of years that was specifically earmarked for the procurement of machinery. We've agreed that from the 2014-15 year, that could stop. Because GPW is now in a financial position where it can acquire all the machines and even the development of the facility at Versailles Street without any additional help from the fiscus. So we are very proud of that fact. As far as the expenditure side is concerned, sorry, I'm just summarizing. So if there's any specific questions, Chairperson, we can deal with it specifically later. I just want to highlight, as far as the expenditure side is concerned, just a few items. You'll see that under the employee benefits, there's a drastic increase. And I think that is in line with what one of the strategic objectives, what the CEO has mentioned, that we want to remunerate the people at GPW according to what the market is paying. If we competing against the market, there's some of the skills that it's very difficult for us to attract because we don't offer market-related salaries. And this budget is in line with that, so we've already budgeted for such occurrence. The other thing that you will see that I want to highlight that where there's a dramatic increase is in the depreciations and the provisions. Now, that is due to the fact that all these machines and the like that we do acquire over the next couple of years and that we've already acquired. We've also, as part of the administration expenses, budgeted quite a significant portion for the 3 years ahead in excess of 20 million, specifically for upskilling our people, and that's specifically budgeted for training, and it could be related to the ERP, and it's also specific job related. So there's specific items that's in line with the strategic objectives of the GPW. In line with that, the GPW, all these budgets still indicate that even with all these increases and all the machinery and the development of the Versailles Street and the increases in salary and the training emphasis, the GPW is still a financially viable organization and it's still producing profits over the MTF period. And I think I will just close off there, sir.
Thank you very much to the Government Printing Works, and we'll allow questions now. Please be brief, don't make statements and cut to the chase. Let's see. Mm-hmm. I see the Honourable Casella, Honourable McIntosh, the Honourable Bothman, and those will be the questions.
understand there is also the IFP that wants to add something. That will be it. Thank you very much. In that order, Honorable Prasenna.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the leadership of the Government Printing Works. Chairperson, if in my absence the CEO has been welcomed, let me add and echo the good choice of a new CEO and welcome, sir. Always nice seeing new people with energy. What I noticed is that there is an element which we've always wanted to see, and the determination to retain and attract skilled people who are competent, who are able to add value without migrating all the time, as was the case. Now, I'd like to know on the page 9 where you've indicated this, how are you going to achieve this? It's there, point number 2 on page 9 on the presentation. Because it would be nice to know whether there is more emphasis on this and whether there is any pragmatic strategy to realize this particular wish as it stands. Also, Chairperson, on page 11, there is an attempt, or rather a page 11, it stated that the Government Printing Works wish to engage with the DPSA for the special dispensation. I would like to know why do you want to undertake this activity. Do you perhaps have people wanting to embark on strikes, or people want to fire the CEO, saying that let's call for the head to roll of the CEO? What is going on there? We know when there's strikes, there's always disruption on services, but perhaps are you confronting a challenge, sir, on this one? The last one, sir, obviously you said you must be brief, and I'm very brief, is the introduction of the vetting system for key personnel. My call here is that it should be done for all, not some only, especially if you talk about the budget that the general financial the chief financial officer, you're calling him the general finance officer, general finance officer,
general manager,
general manager for finance. If the money that the printing works has generated is saying that by 2014 they are able, 2014-15 financial year, they are able to reach a point where they will say nothing, we need nothing from government, then there should be no need for us to say we can only vet some, and we can't even talk about money. Because you will know, Chair, that with the Home Affairs as a department, we are having a situation where we are calling on everybody to be vetted, and not some people only. So this one is a high security unit, which we cannot take any risks, because the country depends on these documents. Right now, as we speak, in Eastern Cape and KZN, people have documents which are like yours and mine, South African documents. They can get social grants, they claim land, they claim housing and everything. So we need passports to be well protected, and any documents to be highly protected. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think the Honorable McIntosh was next.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, it's great to see this little jewel in the government's crown of the Government Printing Works, with a professor to lead it and a team of very experienced men to back him up. And that doesn't exclude women. So it's really good to have this presentation, and I must say I feel much more comfortable that our Government Printing Works is moving ahead, and it is a real asset for South Africa. I've got one or two questions. The one is you stress in your strategic plan under risk management. You just mentioned one thing. I'm sorry, I didn't speak.
Sorry. The key risk that might impact on the achievement of objectives is inadequate skills and qualifications. And I think that's very important, and I think just looking at this stuff, I mean, this unit, government unit, is probably has more skilled people or needs more people, and they artisanal skills as well as just, shall we say, university skills. It's guys who are practical, who work with their hands and so on. So I think in that sense we need to look after those skills and develop them. And I think you did cover that, General Manager, when you said you're spending a lot of money on training and development and you're reworking. And I remember last time you were almost desperate because you were losing so many people to private industry, and you're now busy correcting that. The second thing that interests me, and this is on security, a group of us have just come back from Russia. And when we went to the Russian, the Federal Migration Service, we were presented by some people who were marketing a whole range of security products. They were marketing, all the kinds of things, like you put documents under lights and all kinds of things. Now, it was interesting to me that what could be a private enterprise thing was offering that when we are able to do it ourselves. And that was a sort of pride to me. Not only can we do it ourselves, but we do it without a government subsidy. You guys make a profit. And I think that's great. Then the second question which I've got, which is a mystery to me, is that since 2007, you've doubled your sales in value. But if you look at the number of documents that you've printed in it's on your strategic plan and your performance plan. Your passports dropped from, your examination books dropped from 38,000 to 21,000. From 2008-09 to 2010-11. And then this is on page 4 of this annual performance plan. And similarly, the number of identity documents decreased and passports decreased by over 30% from 1.25 million, 1.25 million, to 850,000. And you still doubled or increased your profits. So I don't know, maybe you could explain that. The other question, and look, one or two of those things are on comments. I just want to mention that in Russia they were doing their best to persuade us to use their products. The question of maps and stamps, you don't mention maps anymore. Do you still print the maps for the trigonometrical survey people? And if you don't, who does print them? And then are you still considering doing stamps? Or I know stamps is a sort of declining resource. I mean, there are fewer and fewer stamps being used. And whether you're going to try to win back the tender from New Zealand for us.
Next was Honourable Boffman and then Honourable Pino.
Thank you, Chair. First, I would like to know whether this is mainly for Home Affairs only. Or we're talking GPW in general. Is it specifically issues, budget, everything related to Home Affairs as a department? I have a reason why I'm saying so. Security, our core business is security printing, as indicated here in the presentation. And for production, we expect to use something like 585 million. And replacement of assets, 310 million. Which amounts to almost 895 million rand, if I'm correct. And we only have a revenue of 840 this is more. What we're going to use now is going to be more than that. But, Jen, I don't know whether in terms of production, we're talking all-inclusive, everything that relates to production, not only as production that is mentioned as a line item, because then you have two different figures. So that needs to be explained to us. Again, we're talking the increase in terms of employee benefits coupled together with administrative expenditure. They go side by side. And the admin goes double with an increase. It's not exactly double, but with an increase of employee benefits. But alarmingly, production goes down. The more you increase funds for employee benefits, the more your salaries go up, the more production goes down. That's in terms of the figures. I'm reading in terms of the figures. And I think we raised this issue last year as well. But last year it was a bit different. You then also have your professional fees going up together with the increase of employees. It doesn't also clear up to us. Why do we have to have more employees, yet we still have to pay outside people fees in terms of ensuring that work is delivered? And there's almost double again in terms of depreciation and provision. And we don't know what has, it's like there's no, I don't know what is our policy, what are we using here? Because the depreciation and provisions always have a policy, so there will be a consistent kind of an increase towards that particular depreciating assets or provisions, if there's bad debt or whatever, I'm not sure. The other issue we raised last year was the issue of sundry expenditure. I remember I said we need to have a note in terms of expatiating on this. What is contained in the sundry expenditure? This year it comes again, still nothing. Now there was a transfer from the department of 1,135,290, which is recorded as 135.2, which is fine in terms of rounding up. But why I asked whether this is for Home Affairs specifically, I was looking at that. If we need to spend more than 800 million and we only transfer 135, which does not even pay the salaries, what is going on? We need to understand the relationship between the department and GPWU. And I'm also checking when we talk security printing as our core function to say how do we liaise with the department as GPWU in terms of ensuring that a message is sent out there to the public for them to also be able to ensure that the security on their identification or passport remain there in their custody as the people who are responsible to oversee that, to avoid our documents being printed by private companies. For instance, I was not aware of many features that our passport have until we got to that place where there was a machine and one honorable member put our passport there and everything just went shh. And I was shocked because I was thinking this is a private company. If they decide to take up those features and go reprint our passport, it's us who were irresponsible in terms of safeguarding that. So I was asking myself whether communities out there really have this message and what is the relationship between the department and the GPW to ensure that that particular education is in, done to our communities, to ensure that even if we secure, we print, but we don't just print securely, we also ensure that even the people who are going to receive this must understand the importance of these documents. And lastly, Chair, we're not sure as to the capacity that GPW have in terms of printing. How many passports or IDs or whatever that is there that the GPW is capable of printing per week or per day or per whatever, so that we are able to set target in terms of the demand out there and see and assess ourselves whether we will be able to meet the demand of the public that we have. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My question was also around the market-related salaries, but I see that Honorable McIntosh has already asked the question, so I will hear the answer. I just want to be clarified here with there's a strategic objective of moving towards electronic distribution of government gazettes. So what distribution methods or websites will be used? Thank you.
Those are the questions. I don't want to answer on behalf of DPW, but I just want to point out one thing. As far as this special dispensation is concerned, I think we as a portfolio committee has resolved that we support this idea because it is actually to attract skills, but they can obviously expand on it. They want the special dispensation to be able to attract the right skills, and I think we as a portfolio committee have supported them in doing so. But over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, for those comprehensive and searching questions. Firstly, the Honourable Member asked about retention and attracting skilled personnel, and asked how we propose to do this. Clearly, if one professes to be a security printer and to produce high security documents such as passports that cannot be forged and ID documents and perhaps in the future ID smart cards, it's important to have the equipment and the facilities in which these high security documents can be manufactured. And the asset replacement program that we've outlined and also the renovation of the Visakhi Street premises show that we'll achieve one aspect of that. However, high-tech machines and beautiful facilities are clearly useless unless one has the skilled personnel to operate those skilled personnel in terms of technical specialists, but also, as one of the Honourable Members pointed out, skilled artisans. This also relates to the second question from Honourable Member Vassella about special dispensations. In order to attract and retain the skilled specialists and the artisans to operate these machines in these wonderful new premises, we first of all have to ensure that we understand exactly what skills we need and what personnel we need. And that's the process of the job descriptions and job evaluations that I've outlined. And we've been in discussions with the Department of Home Affairs as to how we ensure that we can develop the appropriate job descriptions for the appropriate roles and identify through a market survey what the market-related salaries would be for those particular positions. Some of these positions are highly skilled positions in which there will only be a handful of people in the country who can undertake that particular work. or it may involve hiring people who need training overseas in order to operate those particular machines. So it's a process of job description and evaluation. It's a process of market survey to benchmark the salaries that are appropriate for those particular positions. It's also a process of ensuring that the working environment for our people is conducive to them developing a sense of purpose in the work that they do at GPW, and not simply a feeling of being well remunerated, and also working in an environment that is wholesome, that is supportive, and that is pleasant. And the Bosman Street premises are clearly completely unsuitable in that respect, whereas the Visakhi Street premises, as the ongoing renovation progresses, will, we believe, be an environment in which people will take pleasure in coming to work in the morning and will be less likely to be poached by other printing companies in South Africa or overseas. So those are the sort of measures and practices that we are undertaking in order to attract and retain skilled staff. And there are other strategies that we're employing, which we perhaps don't have time to go into at the moment. The Honourable Member also asked about vetting. Yes, and he is correct. In a security printer, in a sense, all personnel, all 530 of them, need to be vetted to some degree. But what we do at GPW is ensure that the level of vetting is appropriate to the particular position or task of such an employee. So I, for example, as a CEO, have to have a top security vetting. It's in my contract. The executive of GPW need to have a high level of vetting, as well as the many of the senior management staff. The supply chain management staff in particular need to have a high level vetting, and that is an instruction that comes from government, from both the state president and the Minister of Finance. And our security division is in the process of ensuring that that vetting is done, in order to ensure that both government and the people of South Africa can be sure that the employees of GPW do not engage in fraudulent behavior. The Honorable Member, McIntosh, mentioned about, he mentioned in passing women in GPW. I should just mention that currently my executive team only consists of the General Manager for Finance, and the acting manager for human resources, as well as the general manager for operations production. We're in the process of recruiting a general manager for strategic management and also a general manager for human resources and transformation. And I suspect that our gender balance will be corrected once that is done. The Honourable Member mentioned about risk management and pointed out that in our document we identified inadequate skills and qualifications as one of the principal risks, and that is correct. And in the past there has been a hemorrhage of skills out of GPW, and one of the strategies that we've been employing in order to address that risk is around special dispensations, is around remuneration that is appropriate in terms of market-related salaries, etc. In terms of the security products, Honourable Member noted that our revenue has doubled over the past 5 years, but the products that we produce have actually fallen in number. I should perhaps ask Mr. Masoma, the factory manager, to explain partly why that might be.
Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, it is important to note that although the strategic plan mentions IDs, passports, and examinations as being produced by GPW, they are not the only products. GPW produces a variety of security products for various government departments, South African Police, the Department of Justice, and our revenue doesn't only come from those other security documents. Now, passports and IDs are documents that are produced on demand. It is not the demand that we control. It is as per the application of citizens via the Department of Home Affairs. Yes, the revenue, the numbers on those did drop. However, it is also noteworthy that the security of our documents has improved drastically as compared to our previous documents. And also coming with that is always an increase in price. Coupled with the other increase in our sales in terms of other security documents that we are producing, other supply to our other government departments, our improvements in the cost of production, this is why we see that revenue streams are increasing.
Honourable Member asked about maps and stamps that GPW used to produce and asked who does produce those now. In terms of maps, the department is actually in Cape Town here. I think it's called Land and Surveys that produces the maps. We do distribute some of our maps through our publications departments, but we do not actually manufacture them ourselves and do not plan to do so, nor stamps. Yes, that's a question that we need to address in the future when we employ a general manager for strategic management, in terms of how do we expand the business of GPW and which are the appropriate the areas that are appropriate for us to engage in. As we've mentioned, our core business is security printing, but as our factory manager has said, we do more than just that. And so that is a question that will remain on the table in terms of what we should actually be doing. The Honourable Member often asked about is this plan, the strategic plan that we've outlined, about Department of Home Affairs only, or about GPW generally. This strategic plan addresses GPW's strategic plan generally. Of course, Department of Home Affairs is our principal stakeholder. We produce the passports and IE documents on their behalf. And furthermore, as the CEO of GPW, I report to the Minister of Home Affairs and to this portfolio committee. The plan really addresses issues around GPW generally, and we'll unpack that over the next several minutes in terms of how we address this question. And I'd like to ask the General Manager for Financial Services to illustrate why it is that in terms of our budget, we mentioned 585 million rand and 310 million rand, and yet our revenue for 1 year is only 840 million rand, and he'll explain how that works.
Chairperson, honourable members, the spend, as the honourable members correctly stated, is close to R1 billion in the infrastructure as well as the production assets. We need to remember that GPW in the last couple of years has also tried to be in a position where it's a financially sound organization, and one of the aims that we had, one of the goals of the last couple of years was to recover all the old debt and increase our cash flow situation, which we can say that we have done so. So as we speak, and that was part of the reason why we agreed with Treasury that the transfers from the 2014-15 year could stop, is that we do have sufficient funds available to cover all these capital capital that we're going to require for all the machines as well as the facilities. As far as obviously we still need to manage the revenue streams. We need to remember that the 814 million and 863 and 915 million in 2014-15 year, as far as revenue is concerned, is just only as far as the value is concerned. We still need to recover that cash. So hopefully we can continue with the current policy and our standards that we use and still recover those debts, and we will be able to pay for all these things out of the GPW budget itself. As far as maybe I can just address the increase in the employee benefits, as I said in my earlier presentation, that the increase is due to the fact that we've taken care of what we expect as far as the special dispensation, if I may call it like that, is going to accomplish, and the specific skills that we require and how we're going to grow the organization. And that's what we expect as far as the employee remuneration package is concerned. It doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to go now from 500 people to 1,000 people. It's not quite like that. But there's specific skills that we do require, which is going to cost money. As far as the administration expenses is concerned, I've explained that the major increase, and it's in excess of 20 million, I can give you the exact figure. In the 2012-13 year, it's 20.7 million. In 2013-14, it's 22 million. And 2014-15, it's 22.8 million that we're specifically going to spend on training, and that's part of the administrative expenditure. As far as the depreciation and provisions concerned, that goes drastically up due to the fact that we acquire all these machines in the coming years, and obviously the machines that we've acquired up to now. Now, as far as production in stores is concerned, if one looks at how we used to manufacture or produce printed material in the past and how we're going to probably do in the new products on the market available and that we're going to make at, or produce at GPW, the basic reason for this reduction is not like we're spending less on production, on the production, on the factory side. In fact, we're spending much more. The issue, however, is that this refers to the materials that we use. And I think the difference between a GPW today and a GPW 5 years ago is that the materials that we procure, we add much more value to the product than what we did in the past. If you take the passport as an example, up to 2009, we produced passports for the Department of Home Affairs, but it was blank passports. So the personalization and all those other things took place at Home Affairs. The ID books today is still personalized at CETA. So if those are all in-house, it will obviously have an effect on the GPW as far as the expenses that makes up or where you spend your money in order to make up the product. And that's the basic reason for that. Thank you, Chair.
Perhaps I could also ask the CFO to address the issue of sundry expenditure at the bottom of the eight table.
Sorry for that, Oversight Chair and honourable members. The majority of the sundry expenditure is that we, as you know, the production assets that we do procure comes from overseas countries, mostly Europe, and we take cognizance of the fact that there's rand, pound or dollar or euro differences, and the majority of that expense is in foreign exchange losses that we anticipate. Until such time as GPW is a full-blown entity and can possibly think of taking foreign exchange contracts with commercial banks, we're still exposed at the current moment to those fluctuations. So we're just making a provision for that.
The Honourable Member also asked, mentioned about security printing and the 20 or 30 security features in this African passport, which would make it one of the best passports in the world, and whether this has been communicated to the communities. In the hiatus that we've had at GPW in terms of senior management, the portfolio of general manager for strategic management, which oversees marketing, has been vacant. And that portfolio includes communication issues not only around our important stakeholders such as members of parliament, government, and government departments, but also communication around our customers in terms of the general public. And the Honourable Member is absolutely correct. It may well be that members of the community do not understand or appreciate that the passports that they hold currently are state-of-the-art and are among the best passports in the world. And and should be treasured and should be cared for because of their importance. This may also become true if the ID Smart Card project takes off, that there will be a communication exercise that will need to be undertaken by professionals in GBW and outside in order to educate the public around these new type of security documents, be they passports or ID cards or whatever. I think the Honourable Member's question about capacity for printing, in a sense, has been addressed partly by our faction manager, Mr. Masoma, which is that the numbers of passports has certainly declined since the New South African passport was introduced a few years ago. And this is partly because demand for passports is not controlled by us. It is controlled by the customers who seek those passports. South Africa is an unusual country in the world in that a surprisingly large percentage of the population actually do hold passports, something like 30%, which is considerably more than in a country like the United States, for example. But that demand for passports is not controlled by us. And often the demand is difficult to predict and makes it difficult in terms of forward planning, etc. The question was raised about market rate salaries. I think we've addressed that. And the question was asked about the e-gazette in terms of the distribution and access to it. And perhaps I should ask again our CFO to address that issue of how we can get hold of the e-gazette in printed or electronic format.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. The plan with the e-gazette is that up to now GBW doesn't have a website, so we're in the process of creating such a website. So the web will enable people who want access to the e-gazette to download it from that website. But we also cater for the situation where we'll still have walk-in customers. So we won't do mass production like we're doing now in the printing facility itself. We've already procured machines at our publication division already, where if there's walk-in customers, we can then print it right there and then. So you'll also cut out on the wastage factor. So as people walk in, it can be printed then immediately. Maybe, I don't know whether you wanted me to show you, I got a sample here of how the web page is going to look like. Do you want to see it?
High number that the
general manager for finance mentioned in terms of the printing that they are currently purchasing, vis-a-vis the reduction that will be there given the new e-gazette. Because I think that made sense in terms of why they're migrating from that to the other one. The other question is also, how many languages are they going to produce the e-gazette? Because in South Africa, we've got 11 official languages. So none of those people should be disadvantaged by virtue of their language. They need to be able to read and understand the communication that government wants to communicate to them.
General Manager wants to comment on those two matters, or the one, and give the other one to the CEO. And the Honourable Bothman.
The in terms of the Act, I think there's 1% for training from 1% of the full staff complement salaries. If you budget 180 million for staff benefits, 1% of that will then be budgeted for the skills development. Hence, your claim will then your workplace skills plan and all that. And in submission of that, you then can claim 3% of that. Now, I want to know, and also there's an issue on the, this grant, discretionary grants from CETA. How do you then interact with CETA in terms of staff development to ensure that you get, because I can see you've budgeted more than 1% in terms of that. I don't want to be strict, because I don't know what forces you to budget for more than that in terms of staff development. But in terms of resources for training, from the time you've been there on the field, I think by now you should be gaining from that, the 3% claim. And how do you then go about that? And we don't see that income has been registered here. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, CL.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'll ask the General Manager to address the issue of finance, to address the issue of the e-gazette, but perhaps when it comes to the 1% for training and the CETA and the 3%, I'll ask the Acting General Manager for Human Resources and Transformation to address that. So firstly, the General Manager of Finance.
Sorry, Chair, so that I don't miscommunicate again. I just want to understand the gist of what the question is, because I thought we addressed it. Clearly not.
Through you, Chair, which question? The second one? Or the former? Let me just rephrase the fourth question. The first question is, you migrating from the printing of government gazettes, not all together, but somehow to ensure that you minimize expenditure on paper printing. Now, currently, how much paper are you printing for the government gazette? That's the question. And then the second question is relating to the issue of language on your government gazettes, especially given the fact that in South Africa we've got 11 official languages and we need them to have access to every government communication. So, thank you.
Chairperson, Honourable Members, like I said it before, if you received all the gazettes in the last 12 months, you would have received 110,000, roughly 110,000 A4 pages. Now, if you take all the subscribers that we got, that total division cost roughly is about 30 million a year. And that's the cost that we're trying to curtail, because at the same time, for a gazette, we only get 5 rand per gazette. Now, that is a nominal fee, and that nominal fee for free, that's exactly what we will do. However, if you want a printed version, that costs money. And we're talking to the PSA as to whether it's then possible if we can charge that printed version then on a cost recovery basis, which won't necessarily be R5, because there will be various prices for the gazette. As you know, some can be as much as 500 pages and some can be just 2 pages. So it will depend on the amount of pages.
The easy issue of the site. Through you, Chair, perhaps I should address the issue of languages. As the Honourable Member knows, the General Manager of Finance mentioned there are about 72 different forms that the various stakeholders who input into the Gazette use. And the different stakeholders ensure that the issue of multilingualism is partially addressed, and so government departments will use 1, 2, 3, 4 languages for one particular bill or whatever that they put into the Gazette. Obviously, there is scope for expanding that multilingual aspect. And the electronic version will ensure that we can explore that aspect of multilingualism in South Africa further. With 110,000 pages a year, clearly it's difficult to have every single page in all 11 languages. But clearly, with an electronic gazette where there is no cost in terms of paper, this is something that will need to that can be further explored, and it's certainly something that we will ensure is addressed. The issue of the through you, Chair, perhaps I could ask Mr. Musoma to Mr. Rousseau, the acting manager of Human Resource Transformation, to address the issue of the training budget as a percentage of the total salary budget, and also the issue of CETA as well.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. On the training, you know, this 1% normally was the norm in, when you budget for training, but as GPW is business transformation process and taking the organization forward, as we've done the past 2 years, we have identified training as one of the major issues in GPW. As for now, years, our people were not properly trained, and that's why we have, for the next 3 years, have put quite a number of amounts aside for proper training of people, which is between 7.5% to 10% of the total salary budget of GPW. And for the next 3 years, we're going to really focus on training. We also plan in the next 3 years to establish training academy for GPW, especially for your soft skills as well as your artisan training, as that is one area we took out of the, at this moment, the South African lacks in terms of training of artisans. Is for that. In terms of we not identify claims that we have claimed money back from CETAs. We have belonged to a previous MAP CETA. It was not very successful to claim money back from a particular CETA. Therefore, as from this year onwards, with the submission of our work skills plan, we will then submit claims for future deduction, and that will be indicated in the annual reports or within the strategic plan or under the revenue streams for GPW. I hope I've answered you.
Thank you very much. We thank the Government Printing Works for their presentation and also for answering these questions that we had. We will allow you to leave now if you want. There's just one or two housekeeping matters that we quickly, it's actually just announcements. But thank you very much, and we do appreciate your presence here very much.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee.
Members?
I can start with these quickly, only a few announcements basically. The one is that tomorrow 9:30, as you would know by now, we are here for the presentations from the, we're actually meeting in M315 for the presentations of the independent electoral
Central Commission. Secondly, we would like to ask all of the members who were on the oversight visit, or not the oversight visit, but the study tour to Russia, to please bring along all the filters that they've taken, and the cameras, and the whatever the case may be, so that we can make one, I think we are going to try to make one CD of all the photos and distribute it. That's just on that note. And thirdly, you might know that the budget vote debate is on the 25th of April. That is next week, Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. So just please take note of that. And lastly, which is more of a ANC matter, but I just wanted to remind members that the study group of the ANC study group will meet tomorrow after the meeting to discuss some matters. Let's try and be on time for tomorrow's meeting, please, so that we can start on time at 9:30. That is in M315, not here. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.